It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No! We're not afraid here and declare your independence. With me, Ernest Hancock. Why? Why are we aren't afraid? I mean, we got a big, giant bad guys coming to take all that is holy. You know, like, what's mine? Mine. Can I have any? You know, that's one thing. They always go like this. They say, you know, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. And I just got one question. Is there anything that's not Caesar's? I'm just wondering. You know, is everything Caesar's? And we're just happy to get whatever's left over? Oh, see, good question. And that is what we're dealing with from my perspective on this march using government, law, edict, power, jurisdiction to say how you enter into a voluntary contract with other human beings. And if they control a thing, you don't own it. It's not yours. It's somebody else's. You're just negotiating for how much use you get to have of what used to be your stuff, your job, your business. If you're not addressing that, you're missing the point. So what we're doing here is we're getting an education of exactly this whole philosophy that is resurrecting itself from the early parts of last century. The unions are coming. I don't have a problem. They want to, you know, unionize, you know, collectively bargain, whatever. But then you got a gun to your head saying, oh, you have to negotiate with these people. Oh, and you got to, like, hire them. Oh, and you can't fire them. And, oh, and you can't. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. You know, when did this become the government's job? You know, I mean, actually, physically, it's their job. Why don't you just take it? And they go, okay, it's called Government Motors now. You know, I'm like, wow. So we have David Bigo from EMS. A janitorial service company that, you know, has 5,000 employees. He's in 36 plus states. He has it's a nice ripe plum they want. They start unionizing his company. They got a steady flow of cash coming in to a union that has been associated with and working with Barack Obama since the Chicago days. And the head of that union, let's go ahead and get that one in, David. The head of that union, what's he doing? Where's he going?
Well, Andy Stern is the outgoing president. He announced a week or so ago that he is stepping down. I don't know that anybody knows for sure where he's going. I think what's interesting, though, is he was appointed to the president's deficit reduction board. And what's interesting about that is a guy that's run a union that has their own fiscal problems is going to be trying to decide how to reduce our deficits in this country.
Well, he and Obama are tight. I mean, how many times has he been to the White House?
Well, I've seen different versions, but the one version I saw that since the president took office, he's been in the Oval Office at least 66 times.
Woo! The boy has slept on the Lincoln bed. You know, or at least seen it. I mean, you know, this is. I mean, wow. Neon flashing obvious, here it comes. When we come back, and we have a longer segment after this opening one, we'll go ahead and come back and pick it up where it left off. There was evidence collected that they were targeting David Bigo's company illegally by their own laws, and then what did he do about it? And what did he win? And then there were other decisions that had to be made. You know, this is a chronology that you need to understand because it's being repeated all over the country, right, not later. We'll be right back.
It's time to declare your independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443. And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock. I'm glad we got some of the basics out. We need to get into the actual battle that David Bigo has had with the SEIC, which is Service Employees Blah 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 Union. Here we go. And you can call in. Okay, let's go ahead and give out the number. 800-313-9443. 800-313-9443. And I see you guys up there. Just hold on a minute. I'll get to you in just a minute. But I want to go ahead and in this segment real quick, let's go ahead and just get right to it, David. You challenged them. You said what you're doing after a year of documentation or a year and a half. I mean, this has been going on. You go, look, you know, I challenged thee, you know, and you go to who and challenge what?
Well, it just got point, Ernest, that, you know, every day it was something new, and we knew we had to do something. And one of the favorite tactics of the SEIU is to use unfair labor practices with you that they file with the National Labor Relations Board. And they would file frivolous type of charges against us, like we wouldn't allow people to wear their union buttons, or we had one where they said that one of our supervisors stuck his hand in an employee's pocket to get union information. And the threshold, again, as I told you earlier, is so low that the NLRB would uphold these charges. They'd say that we were guilty of them without any proof, just the fact that they had filed them and the organizer said they were true. At the same time, we had filed a couple where they were harassing our employees, and they threw the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, threw them out because our employees were afraid to go in and testify that this stuff was happening because they were afraid of the organizers. And we were getting frustrated, so we decided, okay, we're going to use the same process against them, but we're going to get good information. And as I mentioned earlier, we cataloged all the incidents. We had backup, and in November of 2007, as we were fighting off all these unfair labor practices and OSHA charges and EEOC charges and the picketing and riots in the street, basically, we decided, okay, we have to go in with
massive show of force.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. Overwhelming force was the word I was looking for. And so we filed 33 unfair labor practices against the SEIU in one day. And most of them were attached to the illegal picketing past the 30-day period, but they're also for secondary boycotting because they have done a lot of letter writing and hand billing and calling on our customers that, you know, you need to use a responsible contractor, which is their euphemism for a union contractor. And so those were our two biggest targets, and most of the unfair labor practices were targeted towards those. We had a few towards employee harassment, too.
Okay, now this is my point. You had to go through their mechanism using their language in their law that just kind of, I don't know, they threw it in there just to pretend like the law was balanced or, okay, you can't just go up to an employer and shoot him and take his business. I mean, you know, I mean, they had to, you know, make it palatable in one way or another for it to get passed, I guess. So you're going through their, instead of challenging the mechanism itself, you're using their mechanism against them.
Yes, and here's the sad thing about that, and I'm glad you brought that up a little bit more. This mechanism, the National Labor Relations Law, was not passed to protect unions. It was passed to protect employees. However, it's morphed into a program that the unions use and the government protects them. And like all the unfair labor practices that were filed against us, not one of them was signed by an EMS employee. They were all signed by union organizers. And the problem with the system is that a big percentage of the people that work for the National Labor Relations Board are union employees themselves, so they're sympathetic. And like I say, the threshold for finding a union guilty of something is very, very high, where on the other side, the threshold for finding an employer guilty is very, very low.
Okay, so you filed these, and eventually they ruled in your favor just from overwhelming evidence.
Right, and they had never seen anybody do that before. I think it surprised the National Labor Relations Board, and it surprised the SEIU. And the National Labor Relations Board upheld the complaints that we filed. So the SEIU had to do something at that point, or the National Labor Relations Board was going to decide on their own how they were going to upheld the complaints. Well, the SEIU decided to sign an agreement that they wouldn't bother us anymore in the Indiana area, which is what the area they were targeting. And they wouldn't do any more of the illegal picketing. They wouldn't do any more of the secondary boycotting. So, and this is important.
Okay, define secondary boycotting. That's like calling your clients, right?
Well, that's going to your clients and say, like I said before, once you hire one of these responsible contractors, again, a.k.a. a union contractor, instead of EMS. And they found him guilty of that.
Okay.
Which are, and this is important because the union, this whole campaign they mount against you to sign the neutrality agreement is called a corporate campaign. And these are two of the big planks in their campaign against employers, is the picketing and the secondary boycotting. And we took that away from them. And companies in the future can, too, if they do the same things that we did.
By the book, The Devil at My Doorstep, by David Bego, B-E-G-O. Now, there's another part to this. Once they sign this, it's all good. You have, hundreds of employees there in that area. You have a few that, joined the picket or got salted into your workforce. They'd have them get hired and go in, and they start doing a little subdiffusion. Yeah, I get it. And then they said, I want my job back, please. And then what happened?
Well, that was the interesting thing. While this was all going on, they had got 10 of our people to go out on strike. And as you say, some of them were salted into the ranks. And after they came back and agreed to do all this and leave us alone, the employees immediately, there was 10 of them, requested to have their jobs back. And as we looked at it, we couldn't, in good faith, do that because all these people had participated in the illegal recognitional picketing, and which was found and upheld by the National Labor Relations Board. Okay? So we sent them all letters saying that because they were involved in the picketing and it was found to be wrong by the board, that we were not going to reinstate their jobs. Immediately after we did that, the Service Employees International Union, the SEIU, filed 10 more unfair labor practices against us for not reinstating these people back into their jobs. Here's the sad part about that. The National Labor Relations Board, in their infinite wisdom, upheld the SEIU's complaints. And this is after they just found them guilty of illegal picketing and these people being involved in it. It didn't make sense. At that point, I'm looking at it and saying, I'm not only fighting the union, I'm fighting my government.
Yeah, did you finally figure that out? Okay, so then you're going, no. So you appealed their decision? How?
Yeah, we immediately appealed their decision.
To what?
And, you have to understand it's complicated, because, and most people don't understand this, but all this is within the framework of the National Labor Relations Board. So when you appeal it, it goes to their appeals court within the National Labor Relations Board, and they appoint an administrative law judge who works for the National Labor Relations Board to conduct a hearing to decide on the case. And that happened about a year ago now, last April. And they sent an administrative law judge to Indianapolis. We participated in a 2-week hearing, and here's the other interesting part about this too.
2-week hearing?
2-week hearing. Yeah.
Okay, so you're like what, every day for 2 weeks?
Well, we had a 1 week, and then we had a break of about a week, and then we came back for another week.
Wow, wow, wow. How much did all this cost you? I mean, you got a dollar figure on this thing?
Well, just for those 2 weeks, it was close to $150,000.
Man. We're getting ready to hit to the break. So I'm going to go ahead and you can finish the story after the break. Because, you know, keep in mind, I'm going to sum it up what we're doing. We have a union comes after David Bigo's company, EMS. They want to unionize them. They go through all the violations of the labor, blah, blah, blah. He challenges them. Eventually, he wins. Yes, they were being bad boys. You have a few employees that, hey, we want our jobs back. Nope, not hiring you because you were doing illegal practices. You know what I mean? We're not going to hire people back that were found illegal to do this, and you're being buttheads anyway, and I got to fire somebody, take job your job back? No! Then it goes to a hearing for 2 weeks on this issue, whether they got to hire them or not. That's where we're at. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. David Bigo from EMS, a janitorial service out of Indianapolis, Indiana, with 5,000 employees all over the country, and got targeted. Well, they targeted the wrong guy, and he challenges the union's efforts against him and wins. You know, he goes through all their process and everything, and he wins. Well, then, you know, they got some employees out of the hundreds that he has there, a few of them are on the picket line saying, yeah, you know, picket, we're on strike. Well, since their actions were found to be illegal, he's like, you know, sorry, you know, I'm not going to, like, get rid of some guy over here to replace used to replace you and get rid of him and put you in there when you were doing this illegal activity anyway. No, can't have that. So the unions, of course, they, even though they capitulated on the other stuff, they go after this. So then it goes 2 weeks just on this part, just on this 2 weeks, $100,000 to do just this one point.
It was close to $150,000 for the preparation and the actual 2 week hearing.
Okay, now this is, I mean, at some point this becomes a principled thing, you know, and, you know, it's you do the math and crunch and whatever. I'm sure that there is a, and that's the point that they try and make is like, look, if you sure you want to do this, we're going to make it cost more than whatever you're going to ever recover. So we're coming after you. And you go, yeah, well, bring on your best. So you went after him, you win, you go through this 2 weeks, and what was the result?
Well, it was pretty interesting. The judge, and I got to set the stage a little bit. The judge, who did a great job, by the way, had not found in an employer's favor in quite some time, and the times he had, it was very few. And again, understand this was within the confines of the National Labor Relations Board. It's an administrative law judge.
Okay, and let me say this before you go further, so people understand this administrative law thing. I've been through this before. Administrative law is not the court system. It is a due process level saying, yes, you got to exhaust all administrative remedies before you can even get to the court system. So you have to go through this before you even have a chance to get into the actual court system. So it's like going to tax court. You know, you got your own IRS judges with IRS ruling on the IRS. You're doing the same thing with the labor board here. And to say, oh, he's a great judge and he ruled my favor and it's all good and everything is not even the freaking point. The fact that you're not in a court, you're in their machine. They are deciding. You have to be so overwhelming, so well-funded, so much of David Bigo to even have a chance. So, all right, so that's where we're at. He goes through the process, and what happened?
Well, we had the hearings, and, of course, they had our employees in there testify. And I want to make this very clear. Several of the employees that were on the picket line were there because they were harassed and intimidated into signing union cards and going out. They just gave in to the organizers. There was others that were just misinformed and bought into what the unions said, and of course others that were salted into the ranks. But as we went through the process, it was very, very clear that these people didn't understand what the SEIU was doing. They were basing the whole strike on the fact that it was an unfair labor practice strike. In other words, EMS and our managers and myself were abusing and mistreating these employees, subjecting them to harmful working conditions and terrible working conditions. And the reason they do that is because if they can justify the strike on unfair labor practices, if they lose, the people get their jobs back or are entitled to get their jobs back. But we contested this whole time that it wasn't an unfair labor practice strike. It was an economic strike, and the whole intent was to organize these people for the union to increase their membership dues and to try and get the people more money and benefits. And as we went through this process, quite honestly, it was sad. There was a couple instances where my employees were sitting on the witness stand, and they didn't know what they were talking about, and they were confused. And at the end of the day, the judge realized all this, and in his decision, he says it was very clear that the testimony was unbelievable and contrived and was solely put together to support an unfair labor practice strike. And so we won overwhelmingly on the hearing.
Well, when was this adjudicated? When was the final decision?
That was in June of last year. Now, here's the other interesting step in this, and this still within confines of the National Labor Relations Board. 2 days after his decision, both the SEIU and the General Counsel for the National Labor Relations Board appealed his decision.
To who?
To the board of the National Relations Board.
Now, so to their buddies, their golf guys.
Well, we feel that since Andy Stern, who was president at that time, he saw that, and he realizes, now here's another plank of their corporate campaign against companies that's in jeopardy, went to the administration and said, we need this appealed and we need it overturned. And we're going to appeal it. We expect the National Labor Relations Board to appeal it. That's my personal belief.
Okay, so let's stop there. We're going into another break. We'll have a short 3-minute break, and then we'll come back. We have a long 18-minute segment. We can really get into it. And I know we have callers on there. You can understand why. I do not want to deviate off of what we need to get out of this interview. We'll go ahead and finish and make sure we get to the end of this thing. Then we'll take your calls. 800-313-9443. You guys line up, and we'll get ready.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and David Bego from EMS challenging the man, which is out there on several levels using several pieces of law and several ways of getting you because they can. You know, why? How is it that they, and why can't they? Because they can. You know, and then they pass legislation because they can. And then you have, they're going to appeal and say, no, you can't challenge it. You got to respect our authority. And we have guys in the high office of the White House going to support it. So, we need to understand what's going on. So I want to go ahead and finish up where we're at. They go ahead and they lose on their effort to force you to go union. You win that. It's illegal the way that they did it according to their own laws. They sign agreements saying, okay, we're not going to hassle you. Then you had some employees that went out there and you go, look, you're illegal. You shouldn't, you know, no, we're not hiring you back. Oh, they challenge it. They go to here. It's 2 weeks, $150,000 just on that point, whether you're supposed to hire these guys, have to or not. And then what was the ruling? They ruled in your favor or not. They ruled in your favor. Then you have they appeal it because, heck no, we cannot allow this to stand because in the future, if this ever gets out and people know that not only do they can lose with this corporate campaign economically, we just need to make money. We're going to unionize everybody so we can keep the money flow going in because we need to, because we spent it all on getting Barack Hussein Obama elected. So now we need to, you know, keep the revenue stream in, unionize more people. We've got to use these tactics, and now we can't because David Bego in his book, The Devil at My Doorstep, has shown that we can stop them, and this is how, dang it. So now they got a precedent to where the employees that did go out and strike, you're showing that I don't have to hire you. Oh, yes, you do. No, you don't. Then they appeal, and where are we at now?
Well, they appealed the judge's decision from the hearing and to the General Counsel of the National Labor Relations Board, and it is sat there for the last 11 months. And last Tuesday, I got a call from our attorney and said that they had finally reached a decision on the appeal by the SEIU and the National Labor Relations Board itself, and that it was in our favor, and the vote was 3-0.
Because they listened to our last radio show.
They must have, which
now, you
really
think I'm kidding, man. I'm telling you, this is the kind of stuff you can articulate what the real problem is, and you give somebody running for national chair of the Libertarian Party a nice little red meat like this, and I'm like, are you sure you want to play, people? Do you want to play? Because this is what I live for. I love the David Goliath thing to where you're coming out against Obama and the SEIC, and you say you want to play. What is this about? What's the proper role of government? You want to have this battle? This is the battle I want to have. And it's not even, I don't even respect their administrative, their little law kind of, you know, do away with the whole dang thing. You know, I go, let's get it on. Because now they've gone through their board thing. Do they have the capacity to appeal to the U.S. District Court?
Yeah, they do. And let me just say one thing. What I think is great about this ruling is you know, the administration, the president, just placed two very radical people on that board, Craig Becker and Mark Pierce. Becker from the SEIU and Mark Pierce from the Teamsters. And Becker did not vote. He recused himself from it, which was very interesting. Pierce did vote on it and still voted in our favor, which I think is an outstanding win for us.
Yeah, they're punting. This was, you have way too much going for you. You got a book. You got resources. You demonstrated the willingness to go kick some butt. You're associating with a bunch of libertarians. You went to the Indiana State Convention to speak, the Libertarian Party. You start getting national chair candidates involved in this thing. You start getting on the radio. You start having, you know, dissecting exactly what they're doing, who's doing it, how and who benefits, and what the future is. They're going punt, punt, punt. We'll start over again, do something somewhere, but not David.
Yeah. Now, you did ask the question, can they appeal it to the judicial system? Yes, they can.
Of course they can. Are they going
to? They go to the Seventh Circuit Court.
Are they going to?
Well, we have not heard anything so far.
How long do they have to appeal?
Ernest, I don't remember what the time period is, but I'm sure it's fairly significant. What's interesting is they haven't so far, and normally when they've done these things, they've done them pretty quickly.
Oh, no, it's 30, 60 days.
It's somewhere in that range, yeah, 30, you know, 60 days.
It may be 90, it may be a year. I mean, it's their thing. I mean, you know, they can, you know, and then they can get a ruling to overturn the deadline, and they can do them because they can. I mean, you know, it just keeps going on and on and on and on. Keep me informed of this case.
We absolutely will.
This is such a neon flashing example of what has happened. And I want to have whatever influence I can with you on this one issue. It is your job. It's your property. It belongs to you. The labor belongs to the employee. They can do. You can't make them work for you. You know, you can set the conditions under which they work for you, as can they. Heck, they can collectively bargain. I don't care. You know, the thing is that the job is yours. And every single one of these layers of government is to give the impression and to the reality when they got the force of a shiny badge and a gun. And they say, you know what? That job is not yours. It belongs to the government to do as they will with it. And then they set some kind of criteria, and you went through all this. All told, how much do you think, not even counting your time, I mean just cash out of your checkbook, how much have you spent on this from beginning to end to where we are now?
Well, close to $1 million in fees and that we spent over the past 3 years or so.
Did you recoup that by not being unionized and administrative and additional? Because really their contract that they wanted to get was less health care, available longer after, you know, wait period before they were eligible. It was the contract started them off at a lower wage. I mean, you know, this is – I mean, how was this in the to the benefit of the employee?
Well, I can look at myself in the mirror every day and say you did the right thing for your people because now they have the freedom of choice. And they work within a company that has the freedom to express themselves and develop based on their own merits. And I feel good about that.
What's the employee's attitude towards this whole thing? Are they like, you know, power to David for, you know, challenging the man, or morale high, low? They care? They even know? I mean, they understand?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of them that don't know, obviously, but there were some that were they're very happy that we took the position we did and understood what was going on and. They appreciate the fact that you know they are now in a position where you know they're making as much or more than other people in their jobs in their areas, and they're not paying union dues, and they have that freedom of choice. Whereas if we would have succumbed, they wouldn't have had that freedom of choice.
Okay,
and so we protected employees' rights.
This is what I want to know. Where are we going now? Now, this is much bigger than just you and your company. I mean, this is a good example. You have a chronology of this in the book and us talking about it and so on. But I can see the unions and the government and everybody and their grandma, they are in trouble. The money is going away. They'll keep printing. They'll hyperinflate. It'll go in because the only thing that can stop the economic devaluation of the dollar is going to have its own side effects. But the only thing that can stop them is them stop spending and print money. That's not going to happen. So here we go. So I'm looking at this example of what's happened to you that it will replicate. It's probably already being replicated across the country. And are you aware of other places that they're doing the same kinds of things?
Oh, yeah. It's going all the time. It's starting to ramp back up. Last year, the unions backed off, and there's statistics that you can go online and find that corporate campaigns by unions fell drastically last year because they expected the administration to pass the Employee Free Choice Act, and that didn't happen. And even Trumka, the head of the AFL-CIO, came out here just recently and said that they're going to do everything they can to get it done. And in the meantime, we're seeing corporate campaigns by unions being ramped up considerably because they need dues. They need members. And they need, if they don't get EFCA passed, they've got to get it somehow, and it's going to be through campaigns like they ran against our company.
Wow. Okay. So we're in a situation now to where we can expect more of this. Are you sending copies of your books to people in this situation?
We have, every time we hear of people in these type situations, we do, and I send out emails on a regular basis to people in our industry. I've been quoted in magazines that are specific to our industry about what's going on, and to give them some idea of what's coming down the pike and how to prepare and how to fight it if they decide to fight it.
I'm glad you're there. And David, I'm hopefully this has – do you see an end to this, or have you structured your business in such a way that you can focus on this as a principled thing? Are you looking forward to just getting back to family and business and your other interest, or has this sparked you to become an activist? I mean, how is this going to affect how you spend your time?
Well, I spend probably an inordinate amount of time still on this because I am an advocate for it, and I believe that you know, we can't give up personal liberties and personal freedoms, and I think that's what they're trying to do, whether it's businesses or employees. And that's in both cases, that's what's happening when they force neutrality agreements or the Employee Free Choice Act on you. I mean, if the Employee Free Choice Act goes through, there will be no secret ballot elections anymore. And there's mandatory arbitration. By the way, I misquoted this last time I talked to you, but I said 12 months, but it's actually within 120 days. And the unions, if they're not going to negotiate with the employer, they're going to go to arbitration because there'll be a government employee that oversees it and will set the terms of the contract, and the employees won't get to vote on it. And it'll be set, and the union's got a two-year agreement, and they've already automatically got due-paying members. So
No, wait. You know, explain what you were just talking about. I have no idea what you're saying.
Well, by the Employee Free Choice Act terms, if it goes through, you have 90 days to negotiate a contract. If you can't do it, they will appoint a government administrator to determine the contract.
Okay, wait. Why are you having once they pass this act, they have to go out and get their 50+1 people to sign, get their card.
Oh, yeah, but they'll do that.
So they get that, and then the contract is whatever they say it's going to be if you can't come up with one within a few months.
Yeah.
All right. So the government's negotiating contracts.
Yep.
You know, how is this not a collectivist, totalitarian, commie, soci, whateverist? You know, it's collectivist, it's statist, it's not freedomist, I can tell you that, you know. Mm-hmm. So you keep chronicling, man. I'll keep helping you get the word out and we'll whatever, because this is fundamental at the proper role of government in defending of individual rights. And in all of this, it keeps getting missed. Where's the constitutional protection of individual rights? So I'm thinking, is there an amendment to that? Is there a Bill of Rights? Is there a due process? Is there? And that's what all these administrative courts are. Yeah, you got your due process with our guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's something has, and here in Arizona, you know, we have the constitutional provision that you can't have closed shops. You have a right to work state, and you can do so. That has made a big difference here. You know, but what do you see is the advocacy as a solution? I mean, you know, let's not do this act, or is it something more holistic? You know, changing us or laws being repealed or constitutional amendments or states, you know, taking on their role to do protections against this federal. I mean, you know, where is the battle so that we don't have to keep fighting this over and over?
Well, I think we have to have national right to work laws, and you know, the national right to work has worked with me on several occasions on this thing, and they've supported me. And in fact, they recognized me here a few weeks ago for my efforts. And we need laws like you have in Arizona and every state, so that people can choose to opt out if something like this happens. The problem with that is in some states, like in Indiana, we don't have the national right to work law. However, teachers don't have to join the teachers union here, but many of them do because of the pressure they get from organizers and fellow teachers. So even having a national right to work law, I mean, or a state law for that would help, but we definitely have to move towards that, and we have to make sure that these laws don't get passed. And here's the other scary part with the people on the board, like Becker and Pierce. They have made it known in their writings that they believe they can rewrite labor relation law to incorporate the Employee Free Choice Act or parts of it to benefit the unions.
Yeah, no, it's obvious what's going on. We have to change our culture. We got to change. This is my whole advocacy. This stuff permeates because we're uneducated. We don't understand what makes America so strong. It's the protection of individual rights. And that job is yours. Their labor is theirs. When you start getting in this government forced negotiation thing, you're messed up. All right, let's go ahead and go to the phones real quick. Mark in Georgia, real fast, man, before we hit the break.
Okay, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, go, man.
All right. I was just watching, I think it was on YouTube, I was online, about the shareholders meeting with the Coca-Cola company about a documentary. I imagine it's alternate media. About how the Coca-Cola company had a number of environmental infractions, which isn't really the hot issue here, as that their people were being intimidated, violence being used, including assassinations, to keep them from unionizing. Unions are only necessary where you have bad management that does not want honest competition. Because when you have honest competition, people get paid according to how they contribute to your improving your situation improves their situation. The problem is that you have people like Andrew Carnegie, who back in the 19th century
And time's up. I'll hold you over, Mark. Go ahead, but you got to make your point. Get to it when we get back. Get to it, man. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock, David Bego, in just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, David Bego, author of The Devil at My Doorstep and his battle against the service unions. Mark, I'm going to give you 30 seconds to make your point. Go to it, man.
My point is that unions can serve a proper function, but it can go either way. The thing is that we need to restore honest competition, and when unions stifle honest competition, it is a detriment, just as when the Coca-Cola company went about using violence and intimidation to keep people from signing up to unions because they did not want honest competition. It cuts both ways.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. David, let me give my two cents real quick, and then you can finish up with yours. This is my point. From the beginning, whenever you had the steel industry, and you had the oil industry, Standard Oil, and you got Carnegie, and you got the Morgans, and you got all the banking and all this kind of stuff, these monopolies cannot exist without government doing it. They have to grant them some kinds of monopoly. You have to pass legislation that prevents them from having competition. The only alternative to this kind of a monopolistic power is for the people, because these are the only jobs that are out there, for them to then, the natural order of this is you create unions. They collectively bargain. They go, okay, you're the only job in town. Well, guess what? We got the only workforce in town, and we're going back and forth, ouch, quit it. Then you have the machine guns come out at coal strikes. You got the pink in detectives. You got, boom, 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 death and violence, and the government goes, okay, well, who's going to give us the most goodies for us to get elected, and we'll solve it, and we got machine guns too. So this is how this goes. When the problem at the root, the holistic problem of this at the beginning, is government got outside of their box of defending individual rights. You own the job, they own their labor. And I go, whenever you get outside that box, you just create more and more and more layers of this stuff. If you eliminated this government-sponsored monopolies and these corporation limited liability kind of make everybody responsible for everything and have government in its own box it's supposed to be, problem freaking solved, in my humble opinion. What's yours, David?
Well, I want to go back to what Mark said. He has to understand something. The SEIU used the same type of tactics against us. It's all about perception, propaganda, and misinformation. They accused us of violence and discrimination and pressuring our employees too. And they filed OSHA complaints and unfair labor practices and EEOC complaints. We were not found guilty of one. And they do this because they're trying to make the company look bad in the public's eye, and they're trying to force the company to give in and capitulate. I would guess if Mark went back and really reviewed the law part of that, the NLRB cases, that a lot of this stuff didn't happen. I mean, in one of ours, they accused us of forcing our people to take human body parts out in bags at night out of a biology lab. It just wasn't true. And we were found innocent of that. So a lot of this is misconception. It's propaganda.
Well, David, I'm glad you're doing this. Keep doing it. It's a service. I'm glad you have the resources and the desire to follow this through, because you can have an enormous impact on the next guy that may not have your abilities and your personality to see this through, that will be more likely to oppose these injustices on the behalf of their employees and themselves, because you helped and blazed the trail and gave them breadcrumbs to follow. Thank you very much for coming on again, David. And real quick, in the last few seconds, go ahead and give out a couple of the web pages you want everybody to know about.
Oh, please visit the devil at my doorstep.com. You can get the book on amazon.com too. And
Thank you, David.
Please enjoy the book.
They're going to push the button, thedevilatmydoorstep.com.